Welcome to the Just Fly Performance Podcast, Episode 8. Today on the show, we have Dan Fichter, founder of Want to Get Fast and head boys football coach at Irondequoit High School. This episode of the Just Fly Performance Podcast is brought to you by Simply Faster. Simply Faster is a one-stop online shop for some of the best athletic performance technology in the world. Distributing items such as the FreeLab Timing System, GymAware, K-Box, 1080 Sprint, and the SpeedMat. Since I own and use many of these items, particularly the FreeLab Pro Coach Timing System, K-Box, and the 1080 Sprint, I can say with confidence that Simply Faster brings anyone in the reach of today's best training technology. It would be difficult to imagine my current experience in coaching track and field without having the FreeLab system in my toolbox. It has revolutionized both my workouts and my assessment of athletes. Being able to look at the 10-meter fly capability of dozens of athletes in a matter of seconds is an amazing thing if you're a track coach or sport coach alike. The FreeLab system is incredibly versatile, wireless, quick to set up, and compact. The K-Box and 1080 Sprint are also incredible tools for any coach looking to build speed, agility, and implement training scenarios that are beyond the reach of even the most furnished traditional weight room. I've used both, and I give them my highest recommendation. The K-Box is by far the most efficient way to deliver smooth, eccentric overload to athletes in multiple planes of ground-based movement. The 1080 Sprint is being used right now by great coaches to train some of the fastest sprinters in the world, and soon the 1080 might be synonymous with high-performance speed training. One of the things to consider with Simply Faster is that the customer service is second to none. I've never had as quick a feedback with any product as I have with Christopher at Simply Faster. And anyone who makes a purchase with him is in great hands. If you're interested in acquiring some of the best high-tech training equipment available that is being used by high schools, top NCAA institutions, professional teams, and the best private training facilities, stop by simplyfaster.com. That's SimplyFaster.com and find the future of coaching technology that is making a big difference. Hey, everybody. Glad to have you guys listening today. I have a great show for you. We have Dan Fichter today. I've known of Dan for a long time, but I got to meet him for the first time at the Speed Football Consortium, or then the Speed Activation Consortium, and heard Dan talk about the nervous system. Dan's knowledge of the nervous system, the reflex system, brain-based training, and all related aspects is amazing and also extremely helpful for any coach in understanding a little bit more about why what they do helps athletes to get faster and stronger, as well as give us some ideas as where this brain-based training system is right now, what it's doing for athletes, and also where it's headed. As I mentioned in the early intro, Dan runs Want to Get Fast. He's a head football coach at Irondequoit, and he's a coach who probably could set some sort of record for continuing education in the field of sports science and coaching, from living with Mel Siff to shadowing Jay Schrader to bringing DB Hammer and InnoSports work to the internet and the world. Dan is a guy with a wealth of experience and knowledge. I think you guys are going to love this podcast. There are so many eye-opening moments that I took away from it, and you guys are going to have a great time listening. All right, welcome to the show. Glad to have you on here today, Dan.
I'm excited to be here. It's awesome.
So let's get started. And the first question I'd like to ask you is, what's your background as an athlete and what brought you into coaching?
I was a three-sport athlete in high school, which you don't hear about much anymore with all the specialization, and enjoyed being a three-sport athlete. And actually, I was probably a five- or six-sport athlete if they would have let me. Would have loved to play baseball and hockey, but I was a basketball, football, and track athlete. And then from there, I went to college, played a little college football at the Division III level. Had a pretty decent career. I was able to sign with the Toronto Argonauts coming out of college. Played a little bit there. Played 3 years in the Arena Football League. Met a lot of great people. And then from that moment of just playing my entire life, I figured, you know what, I'm going to be a teacher. I'm going to be a phys ed teacher, and I'm going to keep playing the rest of my life. And started teaching and studying and kept on. Got into coaching and loved it, and was able to make this a full-time business probably about 6 years ago. Got out of teaching and And now I play all day long in my lab, which is my gym.
Awesome. And your journey, alongside, being a physical education teacher, coach, athlete, you've also learned from some incredible coaches, big names out there such as Mel Siff, Jay Schrader, Charlie Francis, or you name it. Could you share a little bit about some of the coaches you've spent time with that have influenced you the most? And I know you could probably go on forever, but maybe just pick two or three and talk a little bit about how they've influenced you and changed the scope of your practice over the years.
When you're a young up and coming strength coach and or football coach or any young aspiring person who wants to learn about a trade or a craft, you think you know everything when you're young. And having the opportunity to spend some time with Mel Siff humbled me about all the things I didn't know. And I'll never forget the time I spent with him just because it was so powerful in terms of my future learning. I went into his house and went down in the basement and told him all I knew about explosive training and how excited I was to learn more. And he put me over in the corner and made me read all the books on aerobic training. And I'm like, why would I ever want to do this? He's like, well, you have to understand why you don't like something first and truly understand it before you start to bash it. And from that point, that's when my research really started. And I've had an opportunity to spend some time with some great people. I mean, Jay Schroeder is one of the most brilliant minds in the business, I think. I think Charlie Francis was up there with all of them, and they all have their quirks. But the reality of the situation is, love them or hate them, you can learn from them. And that's one of the things I took from Mel is it doesn't matter, if people are well liked or not. It's what you can learn from them. And I learn every day at work, hanging out with neurological chiropractors, and I'm blessed because I've had an opportunity to be around some great people.
So speaking, and we're getting a little bit more into the nuts and bolts of things. Speaking of Jay Schrader, I'd like to get into isometrics a little bit. One of the first presentations I've ever seen you do in person was on isometrics. And what are your thoughts on a few things? Long duration isometrics. People talk about these 2, 3, 4 minute holds. And then what are your thoughts on some more traditional ways of approaching isometrics for both just maybe absolute strength or in-season maintenance?
First of all, I like all kinds of isometrics. So whether you are holding weight and then moving it dynamically, whether you are holding certain positions, I think isometrics, I think you have to learn how to stop before you can learn how to go. And I think that's the fundamental key of isometrics is, teaching your body posture, position, where that stopping point is. And, and Douglas Heal will call it zones of transformation, right? So I think that understanding the stopping points are a huge component to moving efficiently. So have I done iso holds for 5 minutes in time? Absolutely. Matter of fact, Jay used to make me send him video of me holding an iso push-up. I think the longest I ever did was 7 minutes and 50 seconds, and he told me it was terrible. So I went back to the drawing board and kept going. But then you have to work in reality into your training plans because if I have kids hold isometric poses for 5 minutes, I'm probably not going to have many kids training in my facility. So we had to figure out different ways to be able to get what we needed from the exercise, but yet make the kids happy that they weren't put in jail or anything. So isometrics on all levels, and you hear Cal Dietz talk about it all the time. He builds it into his triphasic. It is an essential part of human movement. And my belief is, if you want to jump higher, your body better be able to land from astronomical heights and be balanced and under control, and your brain believe that it's safe to jump that high, or else it's not going to let go of that power. So stopping is where it's at. So all levels of isometrics, love them.
Excellent. And if you had, in your athletic populations, do you have a few go-to isometric positions that you tend to cater to or use as a diagnostic tool?
Yeah, so if you, I mean, not so much a diagnostic tool, but to show athletes that the fundamental positions in human movement are your feet are going to be 6 to 8 inches apart, and you're either going to get into a squat position, you're going to get into some type of single leg change of direction pattern, or a lunge pattern. So there's really three essentials for your lower body. And we make that a mainstay in everything we do with the young kids. And it's amazing that that people will have young kids just sprint, sprint, sprint when they look awful running. And, you know, the brain learns via repetition. So the more crappy repetitions you give it, the better it's going to get at crappy repetitions. So I believe isometrics takes care of the first part of training in terms of teaching the proper position, and then the brain fills in the rest. So we'll have people hold isometric contractions, 10 seconds on, 10 seconds off, 10 times. You know, a month later, their parents are calling me saying, all that form running you're doing is working. I'm like, we haven't run yet. But but we've strengthened the appropriate musculature to be able to absorb force to look like we can run. So it's not the end-all, be-all, but it's certainly a mainstay in my program for beginners.
That's a great point, Dan. Would you say that throughout the course or throughout the different levels of athletes that you have, do you tend to use isometrics mostly for the motor learning aspect, or do you tend to use them also for like a heavier loading, more of a recruitment tool as well? Or is there one way or another you tend to cater towards using them?
Well, I think in the beginning it's a motor learning thing. With the reflex arcs and everything like that. And I think as you get a little bit more advanced in training and you can actually hold the weight in the right position, then it can become more of a potentiation or whatever you're building in terms of your contrast training or whatever. But you still have to be able to hold that fundamental position. And too often we get into these programs where we don't even understand position or how to get into position. And then you're just making the patterns worse. You're getting strong at being really terrible. And that's not good, because by the time a kid gets to me who's well-versed in a weight training program from a prominent high school, I have to break down all their patterns again to make sure they can actually move the weight correctly. Because I don't think you get a transfer of training if position is off. Like if somebody's completing the bench press and one part of the bar is 3 inches harder, you know, higher than the other side of the bar, and you think their brain's going to remember that to be able to use explosively on the football field or whatever, it doesn't happen like that. You have to be perfect in your position, or at least try to be. And I know not everybody's perfect, but it's the most undercoached skill is position. And, you know, as football coaches or track coaches, we always talk about it, you know, in terms of our sport, but we never talk about it in the weight room the way it really should be talked about.
I agree. One of the things in the last probably 3 or 4 years that has influenced my coaching the most is positioning. And a lot of it I've learned from you. I was thinking a little bit about one of the earlier podcasts that I did with Matt Gifford. He was talking about using the warm-up as to teach position and coming back to the warm-up. And I would imagine you can always come back to those isometric positions and lifts you're doing in the weight room as well.
Absolutely. Whenever we get into a sticking point where I think we're not getting faster or stronger or something from a neurological standpoint, we get into perfect position and all of a sudden the body starts to function correctly. I mean, we've had performance gains by people standing at attention. We've had performance gains from people holding a lunge or doing an extreme slow movement. So when you give the brain perfect, its response is going to be some type of maximal stimulus. It's incredible what happens.
That's a great point. I know after I learned the standing from attention from you, which for you listeners out there is just simply, you know, standing with your arms by your sides and focused on like a point on the wall, I believe, or something. And I've seen the performance gains out of that. I didn't really think, you know, a lunge could yield the same thing. But I remember I went to actually that Z-Health seminar a few weeks ago, and we were doing various things, and we'd always do an assessment afterwards, you know, do this drill and now assess. And so that lunge makes perfect sense. It's almost the same thing in therapy too. Sometimes, like, you know, it's like, did the therapy work or did it not? And in thinking of the lifting as therapy, you know, and I know a big thing you're all about too is immediate gains. Like, are you getting the immediate gains out of what you do?
Well, if your body and your brain like it, you'll see the result. I would imagine in Z Health they'll check that, right? So if you're getting some type of response from that instantly, the brain is accepting of it, and that's good stuff. So that's a way to monitor fatigue. That could be a way to monitor an exercise, you know, because not every exercise fits every person. But it's crazy, and I've had a lot of people tell me, how can you have my kid stand at attention and expect me to pay you? I'm like, well, if he jumps 3 inches higher, that's what you wanted. But it's, what are you willing to do for it? And sometimes it's out of the ordinary, and it flies in the face of what people may think. But I've had a kid put 3 inches on his vertical jump doing an extreme slow walking lunge for 5 minutes. And then he just goes up and jumps higher. And I didn't coach him how to jump. I didn't tell him to jump any higher. It just happens. And that's what's so fascinating about the research that's out there with the brain is we really have no idea yet what's going on with the human body. And the brain, the vestibular system, cerebellum, when that's stimulated correctly, pain goes away, performance improves, range of motion increases drastically. So there's a whole field out there that's untapped.
Yeah, I agree. Douglas Heel's Be Active was kind of the tip of the iceberg for me 2 years ago with all that. And ever since him and then meeting you, it's just been an amazing journey. And I think there's so much that it'll be exciting to see where we are in 50 years. And we'll think of where we were back here, you know, just at the beginnings of tinkering around with the nervous system and its potential.
And you look at these minds that have led us this far, like the Louis Simmons and these guys who've done all the grunt work and stuff like that. And it's a credit to them. And we have to keep pushing the envelope here to make this profession what it needs to be. And I think we have so much untapped stuff that's out there. You know, meeting Douglas Heel when I went over there and I talked to a guy from France. He's like, you got to meet this guy. I flew out to London and I'm like, this is where it's at. When you can touch somebody in certain areas and things change, everything changed for me.
Agreed. It is amazing to see things like a 3-inch vertical increase based off just a simple thing that you would have never known about.
Right.
So you alluded a little bit before, Dan, about using isometrics and position to improve running technique. Mm-hmm. And I know from reading your articles in the past, and this was another game changer for me, was the idea that, you know, form is dictated by function. And what is your approach to, you know, I guess, quote unquote, coaching running technique? If, you know, how much coaching do, and how much do you let the exercises and the positions dictate how your athletes are sprinting and accelerating and jumping and those types of things?
I think there's very few people in the world at any one given time that are good enough to tell somebody what their ideal form looks like, right? So I would put Charlie Francis in one of those groups. But for me, like if you take a guy like Michael Johnson, if I told Michael Johnson to straighten up a little bit and he'd run faster, how would I possibly know that? He's figured out a way and his brain has figured out a way for him to move the most efficiently. Now, if I thought I needed to change that to get a better response from him running, I would create exercises based off of what I thought in my head was the ideal posture when running. That gets you in trouble sometimes. So you have to let the body behave the way it wants to, with the idea in mind that you are going to try to fix that function through the gym or through your training. And I got to tell you, I think Franz Bosch has figured that out. And, you know, I don't know if he comes right out and says it, but some of the drill work that he does puts your body perfectly in the positions that it needs to be in without cueing it, right? So the co-contractions that happen in your upper torso when you're going through these running drills that he does put your body in the right position to apply force. So you have to be able to coach technique from far away through exercises, through different cues, but it's tough to say run with your knees up, get on the balls of your feet, you know, and do this or that, because if that were the case, everybody would be fast.
Yes.
There's nobody trying to run on their heels on purpose. They're doing it because their body can't absorb force in the lower plantar region. You better figure out why.
Yeah, I totally agree. One thing I was thinking about as you were saying that is there should be some sort of hit and miss tally at track and field meets where you go and watch coaches and watch them say it. Something to athletes,
right,
and see if it actually improved what they were trying to do. And
right.
It does blow my mind how many coaches will say things to athletes, especially if it's more than one thing,
right,
and expect them to be able to fix this thing that is very clearly like it's a result of a faulty reflex action or lack of strength or force
right.
absorption. One of the things that really, I guess you could consider it a mind-blown, even though it was such a simple thing, was in Franz Bosch's, I think it was running, talking
mm-hmm.
about just running with a broomstick held across your back or over your head, I guess, but
yeah.
just... Or jumping, running while skipping rope, just simply doing that forces the spinal co-contractions to work better, And then all of a sudden, all these things we tell our athletes with our arms, you know, there's your coaching right there. You don't need to, you know, continually harangue them about what their arms are doing. And that was a kind of a mind-blown point for me when I came across that. I was like, okay, so this is what I need to do. You know, and all of these athletes kind of come to mind, and viewing things in light of that has been a really big game changer for me.
And you know what? And it for me too. And being attached to we have a guy that studies in the Carrick Institute for neurology, and he works right out of our gym. And being able to bounce things off of Dr. Lucky on a neurological level has been crazy for our gym, because he would look at a Bosch exercise and goes, not only does that stimulate, you know, the paraspinals, but you're stimulating the cerebellum. And when that motor learning takes place like that, because you're stimulating that part of the brain, the result is twice as good. So you're raising your central integrated state, you know, the intrinsic stability muscles, all that plays into cerebellum function. And I'm not quite sure Bosch knows that. Maybe he does. That's why the results are crazy, because now you're impacting your brain and it's brain-based training.
Yeah, I was going to actually save this question till the end, Dan, but I think I'm going to go for it now, just since we're on the topic. But can you share a little bit about your experience in brain-based training via vision? I know vision is a big thing that you've been doing, as well as other aspects of the nervous system that you've kind of been working on in the last several years.
Yeah, it's kind of always ongoing for us here in the clinic and in the gym, because if Dr. Lucky walks out into the gym and sees an athlete doing an exercise, he'd be like, "That's brilliant. Well, I can't believe you're doing that, because this is stimulating this part of the motor cortex." And he starts to talk brain. And I'm like, "Wait a minute. I like it because of this." Now I'm coming back in the therapy side and I'm going, "Okay, we're going to try this exercise to take care of your shoulder pain." And all of a sudden, shoulder pain's gone when we're doing a Bosch, some type of water bag snatch, right? And he's sending people into the gym doing three sets of that, and their shoulder pain's gone. And he's going, "What's happening is you're stimulating a part of the cerebellum that's allowing muscles to relax. They're contracting when they need to contract, and the vestibular system's being stimulated." So when that started to happen, I started going, "Oh my gosh, I got to go back and relearn everything." So, you know, finding what part of the cerebellum you drive information out of the most through your eyes is huge when it comes to training. You can do simple tests by looking certain ways and increasing muscle strength dramatically. Whether you are putting in different colors of light into the eye to stimulate, you know, your ocular reflexes, there's so many different reflexes that we've yet to discover that impact human performance. It's crazy. We do things in the gym that if I went out and put it on YouTube, people wouldn't believe me. They'd say, "Oh, you're crazy," or "That's voodoo." But the reality is, we're all capable of running fast and jumping high. It's just we can't display it. And what I mean by that, the simplest way to explain that is, you know, if a 400-pound person comes into the gym, if he lost 300 pounds, he'd run way faster. So you have to find different ways to challenge people to use all of their brain for training. And, you know, the muscular system's along for the ride. The brain controls everything.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And you know, we had talked a little bit before that we started recording about the Z Health seminar, and just like what you were saying, like if you appropriately stimulate, you know, not only the kinesthetic system of the body but the vestibular system correctly, pain can disappear, range of motion can improve, and it's just an amazing process. And as well as, you know, the things that I've learned from Douglas Heal, and it's like, wow, I can't believe that you just, you know, for some reason it's like we think that it's all in the muscles and, oh, the muscle isn't letting me do this or that, but then you find that it's actually not the muscle that's been holding you back all along, it's been the brain.
I read an article out of I think it was Melbourne, Australia, on how to cure tendon pain. And what they're noticing is that isometrics, heavy 45-second isometrics, listening to a metronome, and the sound of the metronome and the clicking helps heal the tendon faster. And I want you to think about the implications of that from performance. So again, you know, at first when performance and therapy kind of got together, there was this Swiss ball mentality, and performance hated therapy and therapy hated performance. Now, because things are brain-based, there's a way to mold these two together that's absolutely phenomenal. I mean, that article right there, we've had people, everybody who comes in our warm-up will do a heavy isometric lunge and or a heavy isometric push-up listening to a metronome on their phones. And it sets the motor pattern, it sets the brain activity and engagement in the exercise itself. And that's what the experts were saying. When the brain's involved, and Bosch will say this, when the brain's involved and there's an end to it, and there's something going on where the brain has to be involved, you get a way better result. So, you know, that's where we're at. And it's crazy.
It makes training so much more enjoyable too, both as an athlete and a coach, because you know, one of the things I've kind of enjoyed through the years is, especially in the world of, you know, some of the things with the Douglas heel and the activation, is, you know, we're not rep counters. We're continual, you know, tinkerers with every set. We want to find something to stimulate the body on every level in every set that will increase performance. So it's not just go do this workout on paper. It's how can we take this workout and stimulate all your systems to create the ultimate output. And that's exciting. It makes coaching more fun.
Yeah, well said. I mean, that's and to me, it, you know, as a football coach, I'm more starting to get into the aspect of, okay, so I'm trying to teach this skill during football practice. What can I do from a strength and conditioning standpoint to stimulate that skill we're trying to teach right now without fatiguing the system? Right? So in Europe now they're calling that tactical periodization. I don't care what you call it, it works, and it's unbelievable. So if we are trying to teach a wide receiver to break from left to right, we want to make sure we have foot from above. We're doing a foot from above drill before we get into our wide receiver breaking out routes to the right. And what you're noticing is the motor learning and the cueing, all that stuff, it falls right into place. And then you're getting a training effect from it. So it's built right into your team atmosphere. And you think about it, track and field does that all the time. I mean, that's the origins of all training. So why not build it into a football practice?
Yeah, the more a track and field and team sport, I think there's so many things that each of them can draw on each other. And one of the things that I've been thinking about too is integrating, you know, integrating some of the visual stimuli of team sport, you know, with the ball, throwing a ball, tracking a ball, monitoring players, and integrating that into a otherwise more somewhat mundane track workout. And it makes an interesting difference.
You know what? The most underused muscles in our body, and people, oh, you know, is it shoulders, hamstrings? But no, it's your eyes. Nobody trains their eyes. So if you held your arm in a curled up position and you held it there for 10 days and you tried to straighten it, you wouldn't be able to straighten it. It'd take you a period of time to do that. We hold our eyes in the same visual pattern years. It locks us up. You know, when someone comes in, they have a range of motion issue in the gym or on the therapy side, doc will call me in and say, can you fix this guy's neck, cervical? Yeah, you fix it through his eyes. Because as soon as the eyes break the plane of where their rotation limitation is, boom, gone. Instant range of motion back. Because the eyes will set the muscles of the cervical and they lock. So until you challenge those eyes, it doesn't let go. Imagine what that does to rotational strength. Imagine what that does to, you know, running straight. The track and field athletes are probably falling prey to this all the time. You're running in a straight line all the time. Where are your eyes? Straight ahead all the time.
Yeah, you're definitely. It's obviously a no-no too. I coach youth track, so I see a lot of athletes who are always, you know, looking around. Obviously, probably shouldn't do that. But it's.
And I'm asking you to do that in a race, but I'm saying most of the time spent in training is looking straight ahead. You're not challenging your eyes at all. So when you challenge them, it opens up the realm. The nervous system goes through the eyes, right? So that's the first part of whether it's, you know, whether you view your eye as a clock or whether you view it as vision, right? It functions both, and you better be able to train both. And there's a lot of ocular muscles that people don't train.
Yeah, one of the most simple examples of that, my first experience really was, I think, 4 years ago, and I was reading into a little bit of Christoph Lemaitre's coach, and they did a lot of, I guess, they call them wicket now, mini hurdles. They were just running over cones, but they had mentioned the idea of having the cones be different colors because they said it was emotionally more effective on the athlete. And back at my level of awareness back then, I was like, oh, what, that can't make a difference,
Whatever.
whatever. And now I'm coming along and I'm like, you know what? I think there's something good to that. And I'm starting to experiment with those things now for those similar drills, and it does make a difference. And it's fun too to see the effect on the athlete.
Absolutely. I mean, just by the way you hold your eyes can dictate the amount of strength you can generate. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think that vision, it's going to be really exciting to see where vision heads, visual training heads in the next several years.
And you know, and people go to a lot of these places where they, they train vision and reaction. I'm talking about something different, a little bit different. I'm talking about stimulating parts of your cerebellum by the way you do an eye isometric or an ISOCAD back and forth to enhance motor learning and to stack it with something else that you're trying to teach for that day. So a simple isometric position with your eyes moving from point to point makes the motor learning process happen that much faster. And anytime I can press fast forward on development, I'm all for it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great distinction. I'm glad you made that because, yeah, visual training, if you were to just look on ESPN.com or something or read an article on what some team is doing, it's all based on, reacting to stimuli for the point of specifically getting better at a ball sport or something like
And
that.
I'm
Or,
okay with that. I'm good with that.
oh,
But
yeah.
there's so many other benefits to it.
Yeah, that's a point I was trying to make is that it's, yeah, it's not just reacting to a ball or a player. It's stimulating the motor cortex and the cerebellum to improve power. So moving on a little bit, and great stuff there on the visual and the brain and the nervous system, and I always love talking about that stuff. It inspires me to go try some more of that out in my day to day, as I've been doing it. It's been really exciting ride along the way. One thing I talked to you or you talked about at your presentation at the Speed Football Consortium back about a year ago was, and this really got me thinking, was the idea of super slow movements, like really, really slow. And I had meant for that to initially be a follow-up question to isometrics, but I think this is a good point for it too. So could you chat a little bit about your utilization of super slow training?
You ever read the book, The Talent Code?
I have it. I've read the little book of talent. I tried to take the shortcut.
I have that book right here.
Oh yeah, awesome.
Daniel Coyle's book, I mean, for all the listeners out there, if you haven't read it, read it. It's called The Talent Code, and he went around to different hot pockets of the world to figure out why certain areas of the world create better talent than others. And one of the things in his research was they do stuff extremely, 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 extremely slow. Like a backhand in tennis would take 10 minutes to complete. And from a motor learning standpoint, you get a better bang for your buck, number one. Number two, from an explosive standpoint, now I don't want to ever think anybody that I'm talking about, the Mike Menzer one set to failure, whatever that is. I'm talking about moving so slow you can barely see the movement, but you have to fire fast twitch to move that slow. You're not moving, you are trying to move as slowly as possible. That kicks in your fast twitch. It's an inverted recruitment process. And like I said, you get performance gains after it, but it also teaches you the ability to utilize the right musculature at the right time. So yeah, I'm a big believer in it.
Yeah, just thinking about it too, the way you explain it, I would imagine there's also an element of co-contractions in there, rapid joint stabilization and other things.
No question. Absolutely. And one of the things, like if you have pain in your knee, right, and you're moving your knee and you have a certain amount of pain as you flex your knee, if you move it extremely, extremely, extremely slow, your brain will go right through that area of pain and you won't feel the pain. And then you relax, you move your leg, pain is 50% better. Just because your body had the chance to understand from brain. And again, pain is communication with your brain. And how can we change that pattern, stimulate that pattern, and create the result you want?
Yeah, speaking of motor patterns too, and something you had said before, the brain will can put together, if you have two positions, the brain can put together what's in between. Could you talk a little bit about the towel drill you do with your players, and then like the lunge position in various positions, and some of your methods behind that?
So what I like to do early in the training is is get towels out, and all the kids will laugh and go, "Oh, we're going to lift weights with a towel." And it's kind of like everything in one in training. So we get into a lunge position. So our front leg is, everything is perfect in terms of position. And then we take that towel and we challenge the upper body to do a front raise. So they take the towel and they hold it with a bench press grip out in front of them. And they don't pull the towel apart. They lengthen their pectorals. That creates tension in the towel by lengthening their pectorals, which creates a solid spine. Right. So then I have them do what we call robo reps, where they're moving eccentrically and concentrically with a solid stop at the end of each motion. So the brain can then figure out, okay, this is the end part, this is the beginning part, and then it kind of fills in the rest. So we move like robots for a period of time until the brain starts to understand this is the command, that this is the task. Then it kind of fills in the rest. So that's the other good thing about isometrics, is the brain knows the beginning and the end of movement. And how you get there in between, it'll fill in. So yeah, that's the value.
I like the high velocity aspect of that too. Just training, pieces of training where athletes have to go as fast as they can.
Right.
And I remember something, I think it was, it might have been D.B. Hammer or something, mm-hmm. or Jay Schrader, velocity, the idea that velocity recovers everything.
Yep. Absolutely. I believe when you stimulate the body maximally, everything recovers at the same rate. Meaning if you stimulate it submaximally, well, your tissue might be a little bit overtrained, your tendons might not be, your muscular system sore, your organs were stimulated a little bit. So everything's on a different path of recovery. When you stimulate that's what I like about altitude drops. When you stimulate maximally, your body's forced to recover maximally. So everything recovers at the same rate. Not only that, is when you land from a height in an altitude drop, everything turns on proportionately. That's sport. Everything has to turn on at the correct time in the correct order, and then good things happen.
Yeah, I agree. One of the things I've taken from you is term-wise, or just as a narrative, is the idea of maximal matters.
Yep.
And what is your approach when training anything speed or plyometric related? Do you just use isometrics for the, I guess, quote unquote, submaximal or lower intensity effort? And what's the attitude you take when utilizing plyometrics?
Well, I would never say that my isometrics are submaximal, because we're maximally pulling ourselves into the ground at all times. It might be for a shorter duration period of time, but certainly we're not just sitting there hanging out waiting for the minute to get up. We're pulling ourselves into the ground violently. So everything is going to have a maximal contraction to it, or else probably not going to do it. And that's one of the things that helped me with Bosch, was I won't do a lot of submaximal running. I just don't believe in it. Charlie would say, okay, if you're under 75%, you're in good shape. You're going to stimulate the mitochondria, all that stuff that tempo runs do. I'm not 100% bought into that, but I can live with that. That mid-range from 75 to 90 is where you get overtrained and you get hurt. So if I can start to control where we are on those spectrums, we're going to get a lot better results. So I want to be maximal as much as I can. And when we're not, that's when we start to slow the training down. That's when we start to get, you know, we get broken down, we get a plateau, we get something. So when someone comes in and says to me, you know, I'm really, really overtrained, I'm like, nah, I think you're really undertrained. We're going to stimulate you with velocity. I'm going to get you on a trampoline. We're going to get you into a flying 10. And then all of a sudden you break through those barriers because your body's like, okay, this is back to maximal.
So working with maximal intensity, how does that influence your training frequency? How often do you find you can train athletes frequency-wise on, a maximal protocol? And I think a lot of coaches, like, oh, if you're doing that, you know, there might be a certain, like, lower interval, or maybe that is the best thing in some cases. But how do you approach weekly training frequency when taking a maximal approach to things?
When I first started doing this, I would monitor, you know, the percent drop-offs and all this stuff, and we were getting really good results. But then I started to realize if you train above 97%, you can do it every day. Like, the last football clinic a couple of years ago I was speaking at, I told somebody I bench pressed 64 days in a row. And they're like, you can't do that. I'm like, well, why? there's so many different ways you can bench press. You can oscillating isometric, you can rebound bench press, you can drop and catch, you can whatever. You can do an extreme slow bench press. No, I bench pressed 64 days in a row, and in that training plan, my bench press went up to where I was bench pressing 2.25 X amount of times more than I was when I started. There's articles written I see all the time. Well, I squatted 50 days in a row. I believe you can do that. Again, I think we are limited in our thought process when it comes to how the body can recover. So, you know, the isometrics, again, another key to the isometrics is you're recovering at the same time you're training because you're training your reflex system. So as you're stimulating your bicep to contract, you're forcing your tricep to elongate, which allows blood to get in there and recover. And as you extend your tricep, your bicep extends, right? So, I mean, it's a reflexive recovery.
Yeah, I've always been really intrigued by the idea of how fast you could not be sore and recover if you did the right thing, whether that be something brain-based or something reflexive and oscillating, or even things like playing a pickup game of a sport at a moderate right. intensity with a lot of quick and visual movements. And yeah. it's definitely really intriguing to consider how often you can train if recovery methods are built in and the idea that you can recover from isometrics.
And it's amazing, like when someone will come in day before a game and they'll say to me, well, I need to be stimulated for a game. We're doing a protocol where we're doing isometric holds for 30 seconds at length, but they're maximal. And it was a fresh breath of air when the guy from Oregon, who's awesome, said, you know, we train the day of the game. We train the day of the game. I'm like, absolutely. Why wouldn't you stimulate your central nervous system like that? And you know, when you start to hear these things, like I practice it in my lab, which is the gym. So I've made a gazillion mistakes. I've seen things crumble. I've seen things not work. But when you get, and one of my assistant coaches says this on the football team, if you fail at failing, you're going to get really good. Think about that. I want to fail at failing. So I'm going to try everything. And then ultimately, I'm going to figure out this doesn't work. I'm going to know what works. So you can train high intensity a lot. And if you can't, you're not doing it correctly.
Yeah, it's a good mentality to try everything. I would imagine that the people who have found success through, like in the powerlifting world, I think is the most common example, the people who will squat every day or do those types of things. I wouldn't think that they arrive there just through just training a few times and not really thinking what they're doing. I mean, they had figured out a way to make that work for them.
And your nervous system only gets better by repetition. So you have to be able to give it something over and over and over to get good at it, right? So then the old adage is, okay, well, if I'm not really good at it, how am I going to get good at it? That's where the isometrics come involved. And then all of a sudden you can do things over and over again because you're more efficient.
Yeah, fantastic point. And yeah, isometrics, I think, are so underrated. And just as the ways you've mentioned how they work both positionally and then reflexively, it's such a powerful training tool. The last question I have for you, Dan, and this is one that, I asked something, I believe, similar of Chris Corfistel, maybe I didn't intend for it. But, I believe you are the guy who found, it seems like you find a lot of coaches that we, that become a hit here in the States. And so you discovered DB Hammer. And could you chat a little bit about that, and then as well as some of the things that you took from him that influenced your training and kind of where you've gone post, DB Hammer? Because when that book came out, everyone was like, this is crazy, And I've always wondered how people have taken that and used that through the years. It's been like over 10 years since it's been out.
You know what's crazy? I just pulled up an article, and I don't know when the published date was, and I'd be lying if I told you I knew when it was, about AMT jumps and how effective they are by increasing the eccentric load with elastic bands to give your body the ability to store that energy and release it. So it's funny that you asked that. So that kind of research is coming out now. DB was talking about that I don't even know how many years ago. So, everybody wants to know, is he real? Is he fake? I don't care. Again, it's about learning. Right? So you can scream and yell at me. If you're going to teach me something, scream and yell at me. You can be whoever you want, a guy behind the computer. After I figure you out after the first couple of times, if you can teach me something, I'm learning. So I've got loads of, I'm talking 3-ring binders of whoever was answering my emails with incredible intellectual answers that I've never heard before, that this person existed. I don't care what his name was. So then I don't know if Chris told you this. I was talking to a doc recently here in Rochester who said I actually ran into him at a soccer thing in Germany. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And I'm like, I thought I was the only guy in New York who knew who he was. And he's like, no, I – and we started talking. He's like, here's what he looked like. I'm like, wow. So, you know, again, I don't believe anything I hear, but I certainly knew that what he was teaching was effective. And there's – you know, and we talk about all the people I learned from. There's something in my programs of every one of those people. Honestly, there's a ton of DB stuff all over my programs. There's a ton of Charlie Francis stuff. There's a ton of people I don't even know who I got it from. You know, I am a research junkie.
I think that happens a lot. When we have so many influences, we have something like, who did I get this from? Where did I learn this? And we probably tweaked it a few times over the years. I'm happy you brought up the AMT jumps, because I was thinking back to what we were talking about earlier with the vestibular system, and I remember when the AMT jumps came out.
Yep.
There was such a big, like, oh, you'll put this amount on your vertical, and people are like, oh, no way, that's not possible. And one of the big debates was, well, rather than stepping on a 24-inch box with bands attached to your waist and people, you know, stepping on the other end, why don't you just jump off a higher box because the velocity could be the same? But now it's like, okay, we have the vestibular system, and how is the vestibular system challenged by this? Because your brain is sensing the increased acceleration, and that's what matters, but yet – it just takes years to.
Nobody talked about that. You know, you're falling at 9.8 meters per second squared. I don't care how you shake it out, unless you manipulate gravity and pull down faster. So yeah, your vestibular system, your reflexes, everything changes. Everything changes with that. So, there's a guy who's well ahead of his time, and I think you're just starting to see it now with the research. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always cool to see those ahead of their time coaches, and then the research does start to come out years and years and years later that validates exactly what they were doing.
Yeah, yeah. I just hope that, you know, and there's so many people in this profession that are afraid of new stuff. And, you know, and oftentimes people say about Chris and I is that, you know, oh, you don't squat, you don't bench. I've had the guys that bench press 2.25 50 times and squat whatever they want to squat. I mean, that's part of getting stronger and faster. I get it. But when you limit what you're doing with your brain, you know, there's unintended consequences of lifting heavy weights. So you got to make sure you're adjusting the reflex system and the brain, and you're looking at it entirely. If you're not, you're just cutting yourself short. And, you know, there's been some pretty high up coaches that start to hear this and they go, wow, okay. And a lot of them will shun it off and go, you know, I'm not going to listen to that. But it's worth the listen. It really is, because I've seen some crazy things happen in this gym. And again, I don't get on the internet and talk about it because no one would believe me. And I kind of like doing it alone and doing it in my lab. It's fun.
Yeah, I always find myself checking out your Instagram every now and then just to see, you know, what's Dan up to, because I always get great ideas.
And it's funny. I've got a guy who works with me as a football coach. I've known him for years. He's awesome. One of my best friends. And I took him to Chicago with me for the last seminar. And this was a seminar before that I just saw you. And you actually might have met him, Phil. And he's like, hey, this stuff's crazy. I'm like, Phil, we do this all the time. Yeah, but I didn't really think it worked like this. And I'm like, okay, why would I be doing it then? So, I mean, people, until they feel it, until you get off the table and walk, until you do an eye exercise where you're like, whoa, what just happened? How did I just touch my toes when I haven't been able to touch my toes? When the body behaves like that and you're part of it, it's pretty profound.
Yeah, it's amazing, the ability of the human body. It's you know, I forget where I heard this from, but it's this thing we're living in. It's fun. It's amazing and a fun machine, and it's so much fun to learn about how to optimize it.
Yep, and the sooner we realize we don't really know much about it, the more we're going to learn.
Yeah, with something so complex, that's definitely the way to go.
Yep.
Great, Dan. Well, hey, that's about all the time I have for today, but I love talking with you about all this stuff. I could go on for hours.
I know. This is fun. This is my passion, and I appreciate you having me on. And it's been great developing a friendship with you over the last few years. And I'm excited about the new stuff you have coming out, and I'm excited to be a part of any of it.
Yeah, likewise. I'm looking forward to seeing what you have on the horizon the next time I see you.
Okay, buddy.
All right, take it easy, Dan. Hey, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the show. I love doing this one. I learned a ton, and I'm sure you all did too. As always, please rate and review on your listening platform of choice if you enjoyed the show. And next week, we're going to have up Ryan Banta, high school track coach. We're going to talk all things speed. Ryan is a speed expert, and you guys are going to get a lot out of it, especially if you're in the speed and track and field world. So until next time, this was the Just Fly Sports Performance Podcast.